Welcome into the Pursuit of Manliness podcast, where we are vigorously equipping men to pursue biblical manliness. My name is Jarrett Samuels. I'm the host of the podcast. Men, as always, I want to take a moment and thank you for listening to or watching today's show. If this is your first time coming across the Pursuit of Manliness, I want to say welcome, and I'm incredibly thankful that you are here. When you get a chance, make sure you visit thepursuitofmanliness.com. There you're going to find all the information about Pursuit of Manliness. You can see what's available in the gear store. Sign up for the email newsletter. You can also see the latest blog post. We have some men that are connected to the Pursuit of Manliness putting out some really solid content there. While you're there, I want to encourage you to check out the gear store specifically for two things. Number one, our Point Man resource. This is the beginning of the year. If you're looking to lead your family spiritually, you say, man, I need to do a better job of that. I'm tired of having this husband guilt, dad guilt. You know, I got my grandkids now or whatever, and you want to lead them spiritually. Point Man is the resource for you. It's non-threatening. It sets you up to be the point man in your family to lead spiritually. We have Point Man Gospel of Mark, Point Man Book of Acts. There's 90 days lined out. You get a scripture each day that walks you through the book. You have five questions that go along with what you just read collectively, and there's even a suggested prayer. I know for some guys, if you've never prayed in front of your family before, or if you're trying to bring the younger ones in on, you know, praying and stuff, that can be a little nerve-wracking. So it's suggested prayer that you can use. Again, this is a resource to set you up to win. There's two of them available in the gear store. I also want to encourage you to check out One More Round and Building Better Men Together. They are also located in the gear store. These are video series designed to equip you to lead men spiritually. You watch the videos online. You can do it together. You can do it separately. There are discussion questions that can bring you together. These questions, again, are non-threatening. So regardless of where an individual is on their spiritual journey, whether they're just getting started or maybe they've been doing this for two or three decades, nevertheless, it brings us all together to have a collective conversation to talk about things men need to talk about. So One More Round, Building Better Men Together. And don't forget to visit armoredcoffee.com. Armored Coffee is a sponsor of the Pursuit of Manliness podcast, and Randy Levere is offering 25% off your order when you check out. So once you grab your coffee, your book, shirt, whatever you're going to get, and you go to check out, put Pursue Manliness in the coupon code. It's all capital letters, Pursue Manliness. You save 25% off your order. I was able to talk to Randy recently and say, hey, how many guys are actually using that coupon code? And he said, man, it has been incredible to see the Pursuit of Manliness guys engage with Armored Coffee. I appreciate y'all doing that. So men, it's time for today's show. All right, men, at this time, I want to welcome Daniel Amina to the Pursuit of Manliness podcast. Daniel, thank you for taking time and being on today's show.
Oh, I'm so excited to be on, Jared. Thank you for having me on. I love the platform. I love what you're doing. I love the message that you're putting out there. So this is a privilege for me to be on. Thank you so much.
Now, full disclosure, I've always tried to be transparent. We just did half a podcast and I didn't hit record. So I feel like I know you pretty well at this point, and you're very gracious.
So yeah, I got to basically practice everything, almost everything I was going to say. Man. So it should be like smoother now. This is going to be fun. This is going to be great. Okay.
Yeah, man, I had to eat crow. Wow. But hey, I feel like I know you well, but the guys that are finally now getting to hear you, would you take, just let it, introduce yourself, where you went to school, your story, before we get into this conversation?
Yeah. So again, my name is Dr. Daniel Amina. I'm a general psychiatrist, a child and adolescent psychiatrist, and basically an adult psychiatrist. So basically I see everyone on the spectrum. I trained over at UCLA, also trained at University of Hawaii. We joked earlier that I like warmer places versus colder places, but also got really great training there. I'm currently working at the Amen Clinics, nationwide clinic started by Dr. Daniel Amen. He's written multiple books, Healing ADD, Change Your Brain, Change Your Life. And we have a very unique perspective there. We treat the person. We don't treat the diagnosis. We have a holistic method of treatment where we focus on brain health, not just the mental health diagnosis, okay? Now, the point of that is that we want to shift that stigma, right? There's a stigma around mental health-related diagnosis. There's not a stigma as much around breaking your leg or having a heart attack or something, right? People recognize this as, oh, it's a medical thing. That's probably going to impact your function. But people don't necessarily think of brain-related conditions the same way. Depression, anxiety, ADHD, whatever it may be, can be influenced by how your brain is working, like literally. Like it just, that's what happens. And that's the perspective we have, and that's how we treat. We remove that stigma as best as possible. We treat medically, but we also treat with a perspective of bio, psycho, social, spiritual, which basically means we're addressing the biology. We talk about the psychology, like how you're thinking about self, environment, the lessons you've learned over time and such, the spiritual component of it, and as much as we can, what's happening socially, managing that. Those are the things that impact health. When we treat holistically like that, we get better results. And that definitely in many ways informs a lot of the things we're going to discuss and relation to the book, The Suicide Solution, where it's how do we remove this stigma? How do we discuss it for what it really is? And how do we better address it and treat it versus just telling people to buck up and be stronger or be better in your faith or pray more? Right.
I think, you know, in the last 18 to 24 months, we, for the first time, maybe in history, globally, we were all impacted by the same types of conversations. It's hard to run into a person that you would talk about, you know, the pandemic or talk about politics or who are not aware of it. You know, it's not like a sporting event that some people might've been engaged in or not. This is something that's affected everybody. And I've had someone ask me before, what's the positive sides to COVID? Well, I don't know how many positives you can get, but one of them could be that these types of conversations that you're having or we're going to have right now are becoming more common. And it's a little more opportunistic to say, you know, man, I'm struggling right now. I'm in a funk or I'm working through some things. Is there a certain grouping or certain types of people that you say, man, they seem to be more susceptible to this low point or these suicidal type thoughts?
Yeah, so I agree. I do believe that one, God can bring good out of any evil, even all of the stuff that's been happening. I do think part of COVID was not just COVID itself and the illness. It's the impact of it was the divisiveness and the division that it has created literally in the entire world, right? Like where can't you not find some protests going on really in the world? You can pretty much find it almost everywhere, right? There's a divisiveness. There's a little camps that we've all set up. And honestly, this is a human thing. We tend to do this in the context of fear. We need to find the other that can be blamed for the problem, the issue. It's literally, we've done this for hundreds of years, right? Thousands of years, we've done the same thing. And, you know, my hope is that we grow from this and it does allow for more of these conversations because a lot of us are struggling. And yeah, there are some of us that are more susceptible to this. Because of our perspective in the book, and we talk about this quite a bit in the book, we think of it as nature nurture, right? There's a combination of the nature or biological influences that will lead some people to be more susceptible. There's also a combination of the nurture, that what they've learned, what they've seen, what they've picked up, their own personality traits that will lead them also. We actually take this further than just nature nurture, and we talk about it as biology, psychology, or even further than that to make it even more visual and impactful. We talk about hardware and software. We all use computers now. We all have cell phones. Our cell phones are frankly more powerful than some of the computers we used 5 years ago. The hardware element of it is that what you hold in your hand, right? If you drop that phone and the screen's broken, it's going to impact how you interact with that device. If you get a bug in the software that they need to update, it's going to impact how you interact with that device. That's the same thing with us. If something happens to us, the structure or the function of our brains, it will impact how we come across, how we pay attention, how we're motivated, how we interact with others. If we're nice or not, frankly, the person that cuts you off and is flipping you off at the same time, at this point now as a doc, I'm going, well, I hope they're okay. I wonder what's going on brain-wise, right? Because really that's what it comes down to. Their biological impacts, whether you genetically, the parts of your brain that didn't develop as well as it could, or even receptors that change your ability to tolerate stress. I mean, I'll give just a quick example. There's some people genetically, when they get exposed to a stressor, the cortisol levels, the stress hormone, stays higher longer. Okay. So they're going to be more stressed by that event. Whatever, it could be the exact same thing that you were. You just walked in the room dealing with the exact same stressor. They're going to be more stressed from that event, and it could last a couple of hours. And as we know how life is, one stressor leads to the next stressor, which leads to the next stressor. And our ability to kind of re-regulate is part of our tolerance over time. Now, imagine what we've all been going through in the context of COVID, and then each person in their own personal lives and their own personal challenges. You're just having these chronic stressors building on themselves. People are feeling, starting getting to the point where they're feeling broken down. Now, God forbid they actually have had early life trauma, anything really before 8 or even in your teen years, where they were harmed in some ways, neglected in some ways, abused in some ways. That turns on your alarm system. The world is a danger to you, and it's hard to turn that alarm system down. So they're perpetually going and finding threats in their environment, unfortunately, right? And that's just the biological side. That's just the hardware side. The software side ends up being, all right, well, the world is a threat. How do I interpret that world? What value do I find in myself? What's the meaning of all of this, right? Much of the work you do is, and you talk about multiple things in the different podcasts you've had, but much of the work you do is in many ways is working on that software side, the perspective side, the growth side, the learning side, that helps people reframe their way they process themselves, they process their fate, they process their relationships, they process their health. But there's even another level, right? And where is, how do you take care of this temple? How do you take care of that brain? And how are you even aware if there's something going on brain-wise? Those are the kind of topics we try to introduce in the book so that people understand all the layers that may be going on when they don't feel good.
That's so critical, because you're right. I'm looking at, you know, whether it's tribe or pastoring or whatever, you're looking at the results. You're looking at an individual saying, well, you're not acting this way, or you haven't been showing up, or you haven't. It's so hard to know what's going on internally. And a lot of times you can only get what they're willing to give. And we're primarily talking to men here. You know, I know there's women that listen to this as well, but primarily talking to men. Men are the hardest at trying to crack that code for a number of reasons. And you just referenced there, you know, your book that you wrote, you know, The Suicide Solution. You talk about a clinical and Jesus-centered practices. How do you see these two fitting together? Where, in if we're looking at this from the screen of the Zoom right here, you might be more clinical. I might be more, I'm the pastor, whatever, but you're looking, but you need them both. Like, you're looking at both, you take them both and put them together and say, okay, how do we, because listen, there are Christians, plenty of Christians who they're struggling. And shouldn't you say, well, you have Jesus. Shouldn't it just be good? You just have Jesus. But if you're talking about that internal thing, that's something that they may not be even be aware of. How did you see those two coming together? And what was the aha moment that said, I need to write this book. More people need to have this in their hand.
So this is a God thing. This is definitely a God thing, because I wasn't looking to write a book. I mean, that's just the truth of the matter. I wasn't looking to write a book. I think it's a privilege to get to work with clients. And so I spend my time working with clients all day. I mean, even today, I'm going to see clients after we're done speaking, right? I work with my patients. I like to work with people individually. So that was my focus. And that has been my focus. This book really came about with a series of events, which is going to lead to me how I answer your question here. Rick Lawrence is my co-author. He's already been, he's an award-winning writer, journalist, leader, and he's done a lot of other things. I think he's written like 30 or 40 books even before we even met, right? So he already knew what he was doing here. And he had already seen, unfortunately, suicide in his community where he lives. And he's seen the impact of it. And the seed had been planted. I need to do something. And he started looking at what could he write. And he had written a proposal, submitted it, and gotten, I think the publishers had said, hey, we need a more clinical perspective too, right? To layer in, right? So he's a writer. He's a Christian writer, written before, comes in with a perspective that was that's all intertwined in this book. But the clinical piece wasn't there yet. So that led to them reaching out for potential collaborators. And that's eventually how I got into it. And I honestly would have probably said no initially, but this is a funny thing. My mom was doing a project as part of like this master's course. She loves continuing education. Everybody keep doing continuing education. It's good for the brain. Okay, short answer. But she was doing that. And she'd asked me some questions about suicide and suicide prevention in the church in particular. So I had to answer, and we had to talk about it. I even gave her a little talk for her. So this mix of things. So all of a sudden I'm like, wait, I've been already doing some research on this, and you just show up right now saying I should help with this. I'm like, okay, God, sure. And we started this process. So the beauty of this is that we found that the church isn't, you know, the beauty and the sadness of this is that we found that the church isn't sometimes comfortable with discussing this topic. I don't know if it's sometimes, all the time, right? And unfortunately, well-meaning, good pastors, good leaders will answer some of these questions in probably the not the most beneficial ways, in the sense of, and be better in your faith, basically. It really kind of comes down to that. Be better in your faith, be better in your prayer, be better in these particular ways. And those are all important. And we talk about that in here. We talk about all those elements being important. But it's like telling somebody that they should pray harder when their leg is broken, right? They come to you and like, hey, I haven't been able to make it to work. I just have a lot of pain. You know, people are worried about my motivation. I just can't get to work. And they're like, okay, well, let's pray for you. And as they're limping out, you notice their leg is broken and we don't do anything for it, right? Of course, that's going to impact the ability to get to work and do what they need to do. But that's what can literally happen when your brain isn't working as efficiently. That's what can literally happen when there's software bugs in the way we think. And people don't realize that in many ways, even though we think of ourselves as these, you know, fully aware beings that control our destiny in many ways, there's these little bugs in the way we think. There's these little biases in the way we think that can change the way we process the information that we see. So just like the simple one is that we call them cognitive biases, right? So if you already have a belief because of the way you were raised or whatever, that you're not good enough, there's certain cognitive biases that will specifically look out for evidence to prove that all day long. They'll even instigate and lead to more conflict in particular situations to prove that point. And then when there's evidence against it, something works out well, someone says you are good enough, they discount it. And over time, that just builds up. They just fold. They're like keeping the receipts for the bad stuff, and for the good stuff, no, they're throwing those out, right? At some point, you're going to get depressed. And then God forbid you had a concussion. One concussion increases your risk by like doubles or triples their risk of suicide. Just one. And people don't even think about that. They're like, oh, yeah, I had that Ringo once. Wait, that increases my risk for suicide? No one thinks about that. It's actually one of the reasons why we see the rates of PTSD and suicidal ideation and suicidal behavior in vets so high, because one, they've seen horrible things that their brain is still struggling to process. And they also had head injuries because of blast wounds, blast injuries and such. Changes your ability to even process or manage your emotional brain, right? And that's the perspective we're trying to just push here, is that we need to address it all. We need to be aware of it all. It's not just about being stronger or be better in your faith or manning up in many ways. It's about knowledge and then intentionally living a life that actually breeds health, right? And seeking that help when you need it.
Yeah, and it's so critical to have people in your life that you can communicate to who are for you and with you. And again, talking to men, we have a lot of military first responders and stuff who are connected to this podcast. They've seen some stuff or they've dealt with some stuff. And so either we don't even want to talk about it, or we just like to be left alone. And even as a pastor, I've said many times, like, look, by the time I get to you, we're way beyond the debacle that has transpired, whatever that is. But so we're looking at this conversation and saying, okay, you need to realize, we know this internally. I think a lot of guys are at least aware that, man, something isn't right. Or, you know, I don't got the joy, or maybe I need, you know, we get the midlife crisis or whatever, but you're talking about these bugs, you know, that can go undetected. What happens if we're not willing to at least address the fact that there are these bugs that you talk about?
Yeah, the undetected bugs are the worst, right? It's one thing to at least have knowledge and know you have a particular sets of tendencies. But when you have these bugs that are undetected, or and not only the physical or physiological bugs in some ways, and I'll even just start with that before I even jump into more of that psychological side of things or software bugs. Physiological bugs can inherently limit you in some ways, right? So I gave the example earlier of your broken leg. Obviously, you're not going to run as fast, jump as high. You're going to think you can't do certain things. But let's say you did have a head injury and it impacted part of your frontal lobes. And now your frontal lobes have a harder time turning on. So if your frontal lobes have a harder time turning on, it's going to make it harder to pay attention. It's going to make it harder to be present, which can impact even how you're present with your family, present with your kids, present in your job. At some point, if you don't know how to explain what's going on, you're going to go, well, something's wrong with the situation then. Maybe it's the kids, maybe it's the family, maybe it's the job. So now you leave a situation that might be good for you and you start looking for something else that would bring that excitement, that joy, that it's basically you just want dopamine in your frontal lobes. You want your frontal lobes to turn on a little bit better, right? And that's where people get in trouble, because they can accidentally get caught up in lifestyles that are just about seeking dopamine to fire up that frontal lobe, because that's the time when they feel a little bit more awake, a little bit more alive, right? And that unintentionally impacts their behavior, impacts their relationships, impacts the work that they do, impacts the course of decisions that they may make. Well, all of a sudden, months, years down the line, they're like, how did I even get here? Why am I here versus where I thought I should be? That's just a hardware one. And the software ones are even scary in some ways too, because as I mentioned, I mean, we go through this in a book, but we talk about these things called schemas, which are basically a way of seeing our world. It's like the lenses we put on that kind of help us understand self, understand situations, understand life. And some of them can be health-based ones. And some can be just not good for us. Some can be straight up lies of the enemy stuff, right? But we hold on to it. And here's the tough part. We can defend it unknowingly. We can like try to protect it. Someone else could kind of come in and try to speak life into somebody else and go, hey, no, this is what Jesus is saying of you. This is this. And they'll subtly reject it. They'll reject it. They'll find holes in it. Why? Because they've bought into it, whatever that other schema is, that I'm not good enough, that people aren't to be trusted, the world is a particular way, whatever it is, and they'll buy in and hold on to it. And it's insidious in how it can create problems in their lives in so many ways.
You know, one of the things that I'm seeing continually with the circle that I work with here is this different forms of anxiety and depression, you know, and they looked at, I remember reaching out to someone once and saying, hey, why didn't you let me or us know or whatever that you're going through this? And their response was something to the effect of, you know, everyone else has such other bigger stuff going on. I didn't feel right sharing that, you know, and, you know, but everyone has that, you talk about that different responses to stressors, but everyone has a different weight that they can carry before there's kind of this break. So, you know, what are the things what are the things that would you recommend us doing or approaches to when you start to feel this anxiety and depression coming on and saying, man, I'm not in a good headspace here. My heart isn't right. You know, I've broke free from community. I'm not being fruitful in my life. What do you do with that?
So if that person is even able to ask that question the way you just said it and be aware in that way, they're already ahead of the game. Because often most people don't even realize what's going on. And then they're just reactive. And they're just like a wrecking ball going through their lives with their family, their kids, or whatever, causing, saying hurtful things, impacting others in hurtful ways, not even living into their full giftings or capabilities because they're just not even aware. So anybody who's listening and is already aware that something's going on, you should already give yourself a pat on the back. Okay, that's already the first step. Okay, some people just aren't even aware. The next step after that is really, it comes down to intentionality, right? So a lot of people have done a lot of reading, a lot of work. Some are at the level where they already kind of know, well, I know what I need to do. It's just hard for me to do it or do it consistently. There's that group. There's some know that there's problems, but just don't know what to do. They're still early on in the process of figuring it out, right? But it starts with an element of curiosity, right? When you get anxious, when you get angry, when you get frustrated, when you look at your life and it's not the way it is, you want it to be, jump back from looking at it with guilt, with anger, with even just self-loathing, whatever it may be, and go, huh, I wonder why. And I know that's difficult. And I know that's difficult, but it's actually a huge starting point. If you can move to a point of curiosity, it changes your level of emotional engagement in it. It actually starts to shift your brain from that purely emotional brain response to more of like, all right, let's the problem solving side of things. And on that side, you're actually better able to regulate. It's kind of a lot more of a, like a left brain, more of a prefrontal cortex response where you're able to like look at the thing and go, all right, what's in my circle of influence here? Right. That's one exercise I teach people. What's in my circle of influence here? These are all the things that are bugging me. I'm just going to write them all down. These are the things outside that I can't touch at all. I mean, what am I going to do about that stuff? Right. Things on the line are okay. I have some part to do. And then things right in the middle is what I'm going to focus on. Brain, I don't need you worrying about this stuff out here. I'm not going to put myself over here. Let's focus on the things that I have areas of control over. The other part of it is, and I actually just lay this out as the four C's. I actually tell my clients this is four C's. And I even send them at like the summary emails I send all my clients now. One of the things we saw with COVID was that the initial lockdowns, what that did for a lot of people was that it separated them from their strategies of coping that they've just built into their lives that they didn't even know was so important. Right. When they went fishing or when they went and hung out with the buddies or when they would go to that movie night or whatever it was, these little random little elements of coping that they had, it got removed. And that created a lot of stress for people. Right. And some people have still struggled to like bring those things back in. So here are my four C's. I just tell people this. All right. First is creativity. Look for your creative outlet. What's your creative outlet? If you always had a creative outlet, you had it as a kid and all of a sudden you got too busy as an adult with whatever was going on, get it back. Find it. Is it once a week? Is it twice a week? Are you building something? Are you the person who needs to work with your hands? Whatever it is, I need your creative outlet. Even if you're so busy with work, find something. You got to find something. Okay. Connect. You talk about this all the time, Jared, but the connection element is huge. If you're isolating yourself, it inherently tells our brain something is wrong. Okay. And then the brain is just going to spit out more stress hormones because, well, something's wrong. So it's harder to get better in isolation. It's extremely difficult to. Okay. Now, obviously, if you got to stay safe, if you're in a problematic situation or whatever, yeah, do what you need to do. But even then, it's eventually find those who can support you. Right. So it's connect with a friend, a family member. Some people, my extroverts, they need to talk to somebody. They need to feel heard once a day. Some people are just like once or twice a week and they're good, right? Contribute. How are you supporting others? How are you turning that internal focus on what's wrong in your life externally? How are you blessing others? Is it even just choosing that you're leaving, you know, you're at the grocery store, or you're leaving, you look the person in the eye, you say, thank you, have a good day. And not just think of them as a machine in some ways checking you out, right? How do you find moments to give back and support others? It doesn't have to be these big things. It can just even be the smaller moments in how you have grace with others. Because when you get to that point where you can have grace with others, you start planting the seeds of having grace with self. The last C is cultivate. So cultivating wellness. And this is whole life living. Cultivation one is actually kind of the biggest one in many ways because it's how are you eating? Are you eating foods that are toxic to you? People don't talk about this enough, and I could spend another 20, 30 minutes on just the topic of food. Food makes you depressed if you eat the wrong stuff. It just is flat out. And a lot of the foods that we're being fed and a lot of the foods that we purposely go out and buy make us more sick. Like literally, they make us more sick and they make us more depressed. As far as the answers of why are people more depressed overall, we're not getting enough physical activity. We eat the wrong foods. We're hyper-connected, like in the sense of not the good quality connections, but just on the internet, saying awful things to each other all day long, connected, right? We don't sleep enough. We don't exercise enough. These are the things that kind of lead to us to not feeling well. So as far as that cultivation is, get enough sleep, exercise enough, eat better, find out what's actually good food for you, right? It's usually things that look like the way God intended them to look and don't have a bunch of chemicals in them, okay? But these are part of this. I mean, even listening to this, things that kind of push you towards positivity and push you towards growth feed an intentional path to being able to manage our anxieties and our depression. They're not snap your fingers things and boom, you're all perfect and everything, all the pain is gone. They're strategies for living. Actually, one of the other names I wanted to consider for the book instead of suicide solution, because sometimes I think people will just look at that as like, okay, it's only if I'm feeling suicidal. The truth of the matter is, it's just a way to live. Like most of the book is, the first four chapters is talking about what's going on biologically, how that impacts why we feel the way we feel, and psychologically and spiritually, how that impacts the way we feel. Then the next, the almost like eight chapters or so is about what to do about it, right? How to live intentionally. So not just in the moment. Like if you're in the moment, you're feeling suicidal, you go get help right away. Like you connect with somebody, you call, you go 911, all that. But there's a way to live that makes that moment less likely to happen. There's a way to live that keeps us above the water, right? We all always have stressors. Things always pop up, but there's strategies for intentional living that keep us well.
Which is not being talked about, which one of the tensions here in, you know, I remember back in March and April, whatever that was, and we're all supposed to stay inside, and that's fine if that's whatever, but get outside for crying out loud, get some sunshine, get some fresh air in your lungs. You know, you're right. Like let's pursue health. And if we start to pursue health, it's easier to move away from unhealth. And when we pursue unhealth, we pull the blinds closed. We watch Netflix series all day. We eat Uber Eats food. And you wonder why, you know, you sleep till 10:30 and you scroll
social media with all the toxicity.
Yeah. And so I even said this at one point, I think I said on a podcast, I'm even sick of the people I agree with. I'm so sick of seeing the same messages all the time. I miss saying your team stinks, my team is good. Like, I want to get back to some of that, you know.
Yeah.
I miss pictures of your cat at this point. Yeah. Like, give me other stuff, man. But one of the things you talk about, that hyper connectivity as a father with teenagers, how do we help our kids with this stuff? If it's my role to protect and provide for them, and they got these phones they're on, and we try to do our best, but what do we do with this?
Yeah, a couple of things. Number one, model it, right? So before we even start teaching anything, it's like get the plank out of your out of our eye before we start trying to get the speck out of somebody else's, right? Look at our lives and say, am I doing these things I'm about to tell my kid? How am I managing my phone time, my screen time? Do I got my phone out when we're trying to eat dinner with each other? Do I need the TV on the minute I come home? What does that look like, right? Am I going for a walk? Am I trying to tell them to go for a walk and only play video games all the time, but I'm not doing that myself. I'm not exercising. I'm not taking care of myself. Starting to just even look at some of those basics first and say, how am I doing? How am I treating my spouse, my partner? How am I treating them, right? Just to make sure that, hey, I'm setting a standard of caring for self, caring for the people around me. Right. Because it changes the way someone's likely to listen to you. If they can kind of look at you and go like, you know, I kind of respect what you're doing. You know, I may not agree, but I kind of respect. You're planting a seed for them to listen. Right. Now, the other element here is, and I tell this to every parent, connect before you correct. Connect before you correct. If anybody gets anything out of this, that's it. It's like, and this is with a family member, this is even like work colleagues or whatever, it's what's the relationship like, right? If you're just coming in and telling them what they're doing wrong all the time, they're not going to want to listen to you. They're going to start tuning you out. But if you're connecting is just coming and sitting with them, be like, hey, what you up to? What you doing? The first couple of times you're done, especially if you haven't done it in a bit, they're not going to trust you. They're going to be like, I'm not want to talk to you. And you're going to get a little frustrated. It's normal. You're going to be like, I'm trying. They're not doing anything. Stay. You got to persist in it. Be like, hey. And you might even have to get creative and say, let's go do something fun. You know, I used to like to fish. I used to like to do this. You want to go do that sometime? Connect. And then at some point, have the conversations about building some of those boundaries. It's always easier to set the boundary in the beginning than trying to do it later. So if you gave your kids the phone at 13, now they're 16 and they've had full reign of the phone the entire time, it's going to be a little tougher conversation. If you're fortunate and you haven't yet, then be thinking about how you want to do that, how you want to control that screen time. You cross 2 hours of screen time, your risk of depression goes up. You start to cross 3, 4, 5 hours, your risk for suicidal thinking goes up. There's screen time. We just use screen time as a metric. Your suicidal thinking can go up to two if you spend too much time on it. You're more likely to be depressed after 2 hours. Just simple. Okay. So finding ways to be able to back that down. And really the reason it is, if you're spending more time on screen, you're not cultivating the wellness and the other things you need to be doing. You're not connecting with people. You're not exercising enough. You're not sleeping well enough. You're probably not going to eat as well because you're spending time on screen and you don't have time. So you're going to order quickly and eat some inflammatory food, which perpetuates your depression and your anxiety. So on the parent side, it really is, again, connect before you correct, right? Make sure you're modeling it. Modeling whatever behavior that you're trying to emphasize to them. And if you really do have concern about them, they're withdrawing. They're not talking as much to you or to their friends. They're in their room more. They're listening to particular things or even saying or dropping little hints here and there. Don't do the it's just a phase thing, let's ignore it thing. Sit with them and be like, hey, love you. What's going on? Let's talk. Don't go, oh, it'll be better. Just, you know, forget it. You know, don't worry about that. Because if you get too dismissive of it, unfortunately, what tends to happen is that then they don't want to come back to you later on to talk about it. Right? And that's when people get shocked about when things happen, because the person learned a long time ago that it wasn't, you know, people aren't going to listen or they're going to dismiss it.
Right. That's good. What do you say to the guy who's listening to this? And we know he needs to hear it. What do you tell him? What's the steps he takes? Who's he reach out to? What conversations does he need to have? What does he need to tell himself?
Yeah. Number one, this message was for you, whoever you are somewhere. I don't know where you're at right now. It was specifically for you. I don't know if you always listen to this podcast or this is the first time you listen to it and you happen to listen to us talking about this topic. And I really want to emphasize that this topic is not just about feeling suicidal. This topic is about living fully into wholeness, living fully into your giftings and your talents and your capabilities and your wellness. In doing so, that solves suicidality. That's it. If you live fully into those things, it solves suicidality. Now, first piece to, again, the next statement to this person who's listening is there's hope. Okay. I don't care if you've tried a whole bunch of things, talked to a bunch of different doctors, done whatever, tried a med that one time and it was terrible or whatever it was. There's still hope. It doesn't mean you've done everything to fix it. There are still other options. And one, if you're acutely suicidal, you're feeling like you want to hurt yourself today or something like that, and your thoughts are coming through quick, get help immediately. You call 911, you're calling the crisis line, you're speaking with somebody, you're telling somebody immediately to get some help. Okay. Because suicide, unfortunately, is a permanent solution to a temporary state of mind. Right. Very, very important, point there. The next element of it is, one, there's this book. There's other tools out there. You can jump on Amazon and have this book delivered to you by tomorrow, where it just starts to tell you about the different strategies you can do to help yourself and help your family member if they're the one going through it. But you can also reach out to the services around you. Some people have already started reaching out. They may already know that they needed to stop drinking. They know that they had that AA group. They know that they had that Celebrate Recovery. They know that they have that pastor that they could reach out to, that counselor, that therapist. And something even random, I'm going to say this. They know that they already have blood pressure issues. They know that they already have sleep apnea, but they're not treating it. Those things will impact how well your brain runs. It will impact how well you regulate your mood. Those things will too. So even just starting with, take your blood pressure meds if you got to. Make a better decision today, like literally today on the next meal you eat. Is it going to be something that's artificial breads and all this kind of stuff? Or are you going to choose to eat something that's green and it's a lean protein fish? Are you going to avoid the sugar tonight? If you're feeling crummy right now, eat a salad and some salmon. Eat some beets with it. Go for a walk, like literally today. It's not going to cure it all, but there's something it does about channeling some of that negative energy out. Get in nature, listen to music. These are things you can literally do today. Listen to music, but it has to be music that uplifts you, not music that matches your current state of mind, because that will actually push you down. So if you're listening to like depressing music when you're already depressed, it'll push you down further. So you want the thing that lifts you to where you want to be, even if it doesn't match where you're at the moment, right? There's so many levels, so many steps, and I just want to emphasize this piece. It's not just even about those. It's sometimes it's about how you take care of your health and how you even how you find the right solutions or the right team of doctors or therapists around you. And we talk about some of these things in the book, and I just want to really emphasize that point. There's so many things to do. I don't want anyone to ever lose hope.
Amen. I believe God has created us in his image. I believe we have a sin problem. When you only get that reconciled through Jesus, he gives us the gift of the Holy Spirit. We know that we have of a hope beyond the right now, but I'm also very aware that God has placed people like yourself and others in my life to call things out of me, to encourage me, to challenge me, to point me towards help, to point me towards conversations that need to take place. I've counseled some people. I don't think I'm a great counselor, but I've counseled some people walking through some heavy stuff. And sometimes you just need that person to hear you or to confess that or to say, man, I don't know who else I could tell this to or whatever it is. That might be the first door to future conversations with other people that begin to get you on that path towards health. Every one of us, I believe, has people in our life who depend on us to get this right. And I think there's a lot of guys, a lot of gals included, who are trying to hold it all together and look like we got this thing together, and only to find out someday there's some kind of moral collapse or physical collapse. And they're tired of trying to keep the impression that it's all together. And I would encourage them, get this book, listen to this conversation, and then go from there, figure out who else you need to talk to, a phone call that needs to be made or whatever needs to take place. As you're saying that, I'm thinking about myself. I don't know what it is about 8:30 at night. If I stay on that phone and I keep scrolling or doing whatever, it's like the mood just takes a dive. And I know I got to get off. There's nothing good's going to happen after 8:30 on those little black boxes. So yep. Brother, man, you've given us a ton of great stuff, but I want to drive people towards you, what you're doing, your platforms, et cetera. Where do we find this information at?
Yeah. So, I'm on amenclinics.com. So amen, like amen, mm-hmm. clinics with an S.com. And I'm actually in our Costa Mesa office. So you can actually find, me right there. And some of my contact info is there too, but you can also see me on, I've started again to the social media thing because people need me on there. Apparently it's a nice way to, I'm not still very active. I think the last time I posted might've been a few weeks ago. I don't know, but I do try to look at those messages. So at Doc Emina, MD, DocEmina, MD. You can see that on Instagram and on Twitter actually, which I really haven't been on there in a while because of all the, you know what, on there, but definitely, and as far as the book, it's pretty much anywhere. I've seen it on Target. You can, the easiest one is Amazon. You can jump right on there. I have it probably at your house today or tomorrow.
Well, not only that, there's a link below these show notes that they can click on and take them right to it and get it and maybe get a copy for someone else that you know is walking through that. And I had Rick Lawrence on a long time ago on his podcast. We just read Shrewd. He's a good dude, and it's cool that you guys were able to partner up and do this.
Privilege Thank you. I got to work with him. He's amazing.
Thank you for doing this 1.5 times, man. I really appreciate that.
So. Jared, you are awesome. I love the mission you have. I know God has placed this call in your heart. I love how he's using, he's giving us wisdom to redeem these technologies to actually spread his word. It's beautiful.
Once again, men, thank you for listening to the Pursuit of Manliness podcast. I hope you enjoyed this show. All the links mentioned in the intro and in the conversation will be in the show notes. If you would, make sure that you click subscribe to never miss any Pursuit of Manliness podcast content. And as always, I really appreciate it when you share this show with your friends, whether your social media feed or you text it to a buddy or email, whatever, just letting them know, hey, this is a conversation that I believe you would benefit from. So men, thank you. Thank you for helping us build better men together. And let's keep pursuing biblical manliness.